Iran once again warned against any aggression against its territory, vowing a decisive response that will make enemies regret their actions. Palestinians hold a funeral ceremony for a young man killed by Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank. And France and Australia announced a deal to jointly produce artillery shells for Ukraine, despite Russia's warnings. Thank you for joining us. My name is Kisumi Shahmadi, and these are top stories this hour. Iran warns any aggression on the country, vowing a decisive response that will make enemies regret the action. The warning follows an anti-Iran rhetoric by the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. In an interview, the U.S. diplomat rehashed the allegations against Iran's nuclear program, saying all options remain on the table to stop Iran from acquiring a nuclear weapon. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman has said that the U.S. is well aware that Iran will not tolerate any aggression against its territory and interests. Nasser Kanani called on the U.S. authorities to beware of legal, international, and consequences of such actions and provocations. He underscored the peaceful nature of Iran's nuclear program, but added that the country will not stop its nuclear advances as a party to the Non-Proliferation Treaty. Palestinians are holding a funeral ceremony for a young man killed by Israeli troops in the occupied West Bank. The Palestinian Health Ministry says a 26-year-old Naif Salman Abu Fawda was shot in the head in the entrance of the city of Al-Khalil. The shooting comes just days after the regime forces launched a deadly raid on Jenin refugee camp in the West Bank. The incursion left 10 Palestinians dead and dozens more injured. Israel has stepped up a crackdown on Palestinians. Since the beginning of the year, 35 Palestinians have been killed in the West Bank alone. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kendall, has given us more details about the young Palestinian man.
Circumstances of killing yet another Palestinian in El Khalil this time, it's not clear. What we know is that a 26-year-old Nassim Abu Fawda arrived at the Israeli military checkpoint known as 160. It's south Al-Ibrahimi, Al-Haram Al-Ibrahimi, in the city of Al-Khalil. He arrived there and Israeli forces opened fire. They shot him directly in the head. He was transferred to hospital and immediately he died in the Palestinian hospital in Al-Khalil. The Israeli military didn't issue any statements yet to say, as usual, that a Palestinian tried to carry out an anti-Israeli operation or to stab Israeli soldiers or to shoot Israeli soldiers. As usual, many justifications and excuses. What we received is that a Palestinian man arrived at a military checkpoint and he was shot dead.
Israel's chemical factories have come under a cyber attack, with hackers forwarding a warning note that those who work in those plants, according to the Palestinian media, the electronic Quds Force, in a message, has told the attackers that it will not hesitate to melt their bodies in the chemical compounds. The message said every crime against Palestinians will be avenged with the workshop's bloodiest attack so far. The cyber attack against congressional backdrop is Israeli blood has occupied Palestinian territories. The Palestinian youth have carried out shooting attacks, and this has happened in recent killings in the West Bank. At least 61 people have been killed and 150 officers injured after an explosion rocked the mosque and the police headquarters in northwestern Pakistan city of Peshawar.
Pakistan's northwestern city of Peshawar was gripped by fear and chaos after a bomb ripped through a mosque situated close to the police headquarters. The injured were taken to the nearby hospitals by rescue workers. Crowds were seen hurrying to the blast site and hospitals in search of their loved ones.
We were assembled in the mosque for the evening prayers. I was among those who were ready to offer prayers. All of a sudden, a massive explosion occurred and the roof of the mosque collapsed suddenly.
After this attack, the government of Pakistan has vowed to fight back against terrorists until the last drop of their blood.
We will not spare those who want to sabotage the peace of the country. We will chase after them. All political stakeholders should sit together to maintain peace in the country.
Tehrik-e-Taliban Pakistan initially claimed responsibility for the attack. However, later they distanced themselves from the bombing, saying it was not their policy to target mosques, seminaries, and religious places. Experts say the Pakistani government needs to take up the issue of growing terrorism with neighboring Afghanistan. The Tehrik-e-Taliban Pakistan militants are said to be hiding in Afghanistan while carrying out attacks inside Pakistan once in a while.
This is really a source of great worry for Pakistan and the security forces of Pakistan. Pakistan was expecting that after the Taliban takeover in Kabul, the terrorism will go down and this tide of terrorism will subside. But that has not happened, unfortunately. The Taliban tried to broker a peace deal with between the government of Pakistan and TTP. Parleys were held, talks were held behind the scene between the security forces of Pakistan and the TTP leadership, but that didn't work.
The country's Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif has appealed to the people for blood donations for the injured in a terrorist attack in Peshawar on Monday.
Pakistan is facing a resurgence of violent attacks in recent months. Analysts believe that government has to deal decisively with Taliban militants to maintain peace and economic stability of the country. Nasir Kazmi in Islamabad.
France and Australia have announced a deal to jointly supply Ukraine with artillery shells amid Russia's warnings. The deal will see both countries share the cost of the deliveries. France will manufacture the ammunition while the Australian provides the explosive powder. The Pacific Treaty, is a move from the two years ago when Canberra broke off a contract to buy French submarines. Meanwhile, the French President Emmanuel Macron said he would not rule out sending fighter jets to Ukraine if Kiev makes such a request. He added, however, that any arms deliveries to Ukraine in the capacity of the French army should not affect it. Since the beginning of the Russia-Ukraine war, the U.S. and its allies have been pouring weapons to Ukraine. Moscow has repeatedly warned that such military aid will only prolong the war and the suffering of Ukrainians. In our news review program, we discussed the NATO Secretary General's trip to South Korea and his call for South Korea to step up security cooperation with Ukraine.
NATO has called on South Korea to step up its military support for Ukraine, saying Kiev is in urgent need of more ammunition. Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg has asked Seoul to reverse its policy of not exporting weapons to countries in conflict. He made the comments in the South Korean capital during the first leg of his Asia tour, which will later take him to Japan. NATO's call for more military support for Ukraine comes despite Moscow calling Western shipments of arms to the country a blatant provocation. Russia says the move is extremely dangerous and will escalate the conflict. Joining us for more on that is Gilbert Doctorow, an independent international affairs analyst from Seychelles, and also Marcus Papadopoulos, historian, political analyst, and author from London. Gentlemen, welcome. Marcus, if I could start with you, what authority does Stoltenberg exactly have to demand from a country that doesn't want to get involved in a war to get involved in a war?
Allow me to first of all highlight a lie being told by Western governments and Western mainstream media. So, the West claims that the world is united against Russia. Well, let's put that to the test. Out of 193 countries in the world, only 30 or so have placed sanctions on Russia. Furthermore, out of 194 countries in the world, again, only 30 or so have sent military hardware to the Ukrainian government. Thus, the world is not united against Russia. In fact, most of the world is opposed to the West's stance on Russia vis-a-vis the war in Ukraine. Now, given that NATO has not only asked South Korea, but also certain countries in Latin America to start sending weapons to the Ukrainian government, tells us that NATO is running dangerously short of weapons. Indeed, we know that countries such as Canada, Britain, France and Germany have almost emptied their own stockpiles. So that is why NATO is now calling on South Korea and certain countries in Latin America to send arms to the Ukrainian government. And in regard to the call by the NATO chief, Jens Stoltenberg, who is not the sharpest tool in the shed, so to speak, and who simply takes his orders from Washington, well, he has no right whatsoever to demand of a independent sovereign country to become a party to a war. South Korea has a very healthy trade relationship with the Russian Federation. And also, given that North Korea is a strategic friend and ally to Russia, it is not in the interests of South Korea to start sending weapons to the Ukrainian government. So, in short, NATO has no right whatsoever to call on other countries in the world to become a party to the war in Ukraine. And on top of that, that they are calling other countries to do so demonstrates just how much they have depleted their own stockpiles.
Okay, let me bring in Gilbert. Gilbert, what happened to the headlines of the Ukraine being on the offensive? Ukraine will be winning. These are Western mainstream media headlines that Ukraine will be winning the war in a few months' time. And now they're seeking ammunition from South Korea?
Well, I think your question is very relevant, pointing to the question of a possible Ukrainian resurgence of military strength and connecting that to the Korean solicitation by Mr. Stoltenberg. I think what we're witnessing now is a split in the American foreign policy elite. We know that 2 days ago the Rand Corporation, which is a key advisor to the Pentagon, came out saying that it's in America's interests that this war be ended sooner rather than later, so that the United States could then concentrate on its next area of conflict and much greater interest in containing China. We also know that Victoria Nuland, a testimony to the Congress a couple of days ago, made in her statements fairly clear that she and presumably people around her understand the fragility of the Ukrainian military position and the likelihood of a devastating blow coming from Russia in the coming weeks, all of which suggests that it's timely for the United States to move from stepping up the war to putting an end to the war in terms that still salvage the Ukrainian state. What we are seeing in Mr. Stoltenberg's visit in Korea is something in that direction. It is to bring in formally and symbolically Korea into the United States fold in its present mission of containing China, something which the Koreans by themselves are not very enthusiastic about. So I would not take anything that Mr. Stoltenberg says or the Pentagon says at face value. We have to look a bit deeper into the broader context of the changes ongoing in American foreign policy establishment.
Let me thank our guests for their contribution. Marcus Papadopoulos is a historian, political analyst and author, joining us from the UK. And Gilbert Doctorow is an independent international affairs analyst from Seychelles. Thank you very much indeed, gentlemen. And that brings an end to another edition of the News Review.
That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In addition to the Palestinians of the occupied West Bank, Gaza Strip and the occupied territories, thousands of people in some Islamic countries attended rallies to condemn the brutal crime of the Israeli regime, murdering 9 Palestinians in the Jenin refugee camp on Thursday, 26th of January. We take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The Fox News Network reports, Israeli regime launched airstrikes on the besieged Gaza Strip just a day after martyring at least 10 Palestinians in the occupied West Bank, prompting the Palestinian resistance to fire rockets at the occupied territories in retaliation. The Palestinian Information Center said Israeli warplanes raided areas of the West Bank and southern Gaza Strip, including posts belonging to the Palestinian resistance, on Thursday night, 26th of January, and Friday, 27th of January, at dawn. Palestinian citizens' homes have been severely damaged as a result of the violent Israeli airstrikes. In retaliation, the Palestinian resistance responded to the aggression by firing retaliatory rockets at illegal Israeli settlements surrounding the besieged Gaza Strip. Israeli media confirmed that at least 8 rockets were launched from the Gaza Strip. The Israeli military claimed that the rockets were intercepted by missile defenses and said there were no injuries reported. Security sources in Hamas said there had been 15 strikes on the enclave with no injuries reported so far. Hamas says Ezzedine al-Qassam brigades confirmed that its air defenses responded to the hostile Israeli warplanes in the skies of the Gaza Strip with surface-to-air missiles and anti-ground missiles. The Israeli air raids were carried out a day after 10 Palestinians were martyred in separate Israeli attacks in the occupied West Bank. 9 Palestinians lost their lives following a raid on Jenin refugee camp in the northern part of the occupied West Bank. Israeli forces gunned down a 10th Palestinian during clashes in the wholly occupied city of Al-Quds. In Jenin, more than 70 Israeli armed vehicles and hundreds of Israeli soldiers stormed a flashpoint city and a neighboring refugee camp, leaving the residents and popular Palestinian resistance groups with no choice but to defend themselves and confront the occupation forces. Among those murdered by the Israeli military in Jenin was a 61-year-old Palestinian woman identified as Majeda Obeid, who was martyred in her home while performing prayers. According to analysts, the Palestinian resistance has a legitimate right to defend itself in the face of Israeli aggressions that have been ongoing for decades, with major escalations taking place since the far-right extremist regime headed by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu took office in late December. Press TV's website has also covered the same story and tells us more. Thousands of Palestinians attended rallies to condemn the brutal crime of the Israeli regime in assassinating 9 Palestinians in the Jenin refugee camp on Thursday, 26th of January. Video footage shows Palestinian people chanting slogans against the Israeli occupying forces after Friday prayers on 27th of January at Al-Aqsa Mosque in the occupied city of Al-Quds. Furthermore, hundreds of people in the Gaza Strip and in Rafah took to the streets to slam the Israeli atrocities. A similar demonstration was also held in the Jordanian capital Amman after Friday prayers, with hundreds of people taking part. 9 Palestinians lost their lives following a raid on the Jenin refugee camp in the northern part of the occupied West Bank. At least 20 Palestinians were wounded in this incident, including unarmed civilians. Jenin refugee camp resident Umm Yusuf al-Sawami said homes were hit during the raid. Windows, doors, walls and even the refrigerator, everything was damaged by the bullets. This is while the Israeli regime enjoys the support of Western countries, especially the United States, which observers believe has further emboldened the regime to continue its decades-long crimes against innocent Palestinians. Meanwhile, 3 United Nations experts, including Special Rapporteur on the Situation of Human Rights in the Palestinian Territories, Francesca Albanese, deplored the Israeli violence. They said none of this violence would occur if Israel were to end its illegal half-century-old occupation immediately and unconditionally as required by international law. The experts added, the international community cannot and should not tolerate what appears to reflect Israel's deliberate policy and practice of using lethal force without regard for limits set by international law. Various countries have also, in a statement or by holding protests, slammed the Jenin massacre, including the Islamic Republic of Iran, Yemen, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Egypt, and Bangladesh. Turkey's Anadolu news agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. An independent Irish member of the European Parliament has criticised the European Union for its silence on Israeli crimes, as the Tel Aviv regime continues to commit atrocities against Palestinians across the occupied territories. Mick Wallace, an Irish MEP, a member of the European Parliament, made the remark in a post on his Twitter account on Saturday, 28th of January, after the European Union released its Action Plan on Human Rights and Democracy 2022, in which there was no mention of the plight of Palestinians. Mick Wallace denounced the annual report as selective, noting that it has ignored the persecution and murdering of Palestinians by the Israeli regime. Pointing to the fact that at least 150 Palestinians were martyred by the Israeli regime forces last year, he lamented the bloc's failure to mention the issue in the report. Mick Wallace added, "How can we allow crimes to be committed against Palestinians every day and remain silent? These crimes would not have happened without our complicity." On Thursday, 26th of January, the Palestinian Authority, headed by Mahmoud Abbas, said it had decided to suspend security coordination with the Israeli regime in the occupied West Bank in reaction to the Jenin massacre. A statement issued after a Palestinian Authority meeting read, "In light of the repeated aggression against our people and the undermining of signed agreements, including security, we consider that security coordination with Israeli occupation no longer exists as of now." The latest massacre in Jenin brought the total number of Palestinians martyred in Israeli fire so far in 2023 to 28, and that includes 5 Palestinian children. Israeli forces regularly conduct raids on various cities in the occupied West Bank on the pretext of detaining what they call wanted Palestinians. The unwarranted raids usually lead to violent confrontations with Palestinian residents. Over the past few months, Israel has ramped up attacks on Palestinian towns and cities throughout the occupied territories. As a result of these attacks, dozens of Palestinians have lost their lives and many have been arrested. Most of the raids have focused on Nablus and Jenin, where Israeli military have been trying to stifle a growing Palestinian resistance in the occupied cities. The United Nations marked 2022 as the deadliest year for Palestinians in the occupied West Bank in the past 16 years.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. This is IRIB English Radio. You are listening to The Viewpoint. I'm Beta, the host of today's episode. And today with me, I have two dear guests, experts of today's episode. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Brother, and assalamu alaikum, brother Muhammad.
Wa alaikum assalam. Thank you very much for having me once again.
Yeah, it's a pleasure for me to have you here with me. So, I'm a woman here, and you both are from the opposite gender, so we're going to have a lot of problems with this discussion with each other, but the thing I'm going to tell you is that the leader of the Islamic Revolutionary, I have a quote that tells the main responsibility of a woman is household chores, you know, and actually, it sounds like bitter for me to tell me that, okay, you are a girl, and because you are a girl, you have to wash the dishes at home.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I think let me take the first step in correcting the sentence you related from the leader of the Islamic Revolution.
Yeah.
He didn't say household chores. He says homemaker. There is a difference. Household chores, both male, both the man and the woman, are required to fulfill their household chores. Like the man needs to, for example, Islamically speaking, needs to provide for the family when it comes to financial and such cases. The woman, of course, at the same time needs to provide for her children, give her care and stuff. Taking out the garbage, again, it's the man's duty. That's also a household chore. So really the thing that he mentions, that he refers to, is homemaker.
Yeah, thank you.
One of the main responsibilities, or I should say the main responsibility of a woman, is to be a homemaker. But does that mean that he is denying that a woman should not be a doctor, should not be a driver, should not be any other, profession that might be respectable in society?
Of course we can have both. Yeah, your brother, Ali.
When we are talking about the duties of a woman in the society and in her own life, it does not mean that we are going to to stop her from being a successful person and entity in the society. No, she can be a successful person and at the same time be a good housekeeper. But being a housewife, a successful housewife, at the same time, for example, like you being a successful physician, it does not necessarily mean that you have to do all the chores in the house. No, you can manage them, for example, in the best way possible. You can divide them between you and your husband. When we are insisting on the concept that, for example, the first and foremost duty of a lady is to be a housewife, it's a matter of upbringing of a human being. Yeah. This is very important, which actually guarantees the survival of generation.
You know, this is really nice to hear all these things from you, but the thing is, these kind of mindset is not practical in real world. For example, I'm not a supporter of feminism, or I'm not feminist at all, but the thing is, for example, there are some, I don't know, photos or cartoons that, for example, we see that the lady at home is, reading a book, and the man is washing the dishes, and the people like you who claim, not you, I'm talking about who claims that, yes, this is not imperfection, this is also perfection, it depends on you and so on, will humiliate this image.
What is the humiliation of this? We have so many, you see, the thing, the word, the sentence we narrated from the leader of the Islamic Revolution is that the first priority, meaning what, the main goal of a woman should be to take care of the family. Right?
Why should it be like that?
Then who else would take care of the family?
No, I'm not going to make a family to protect it.
No, she believes that she wants to be something exceptional, and she wants to choose another way in her life. So, for example, sacrifice herself to reach to some goals and to, inshallah, give a good service to humanity. Okay,
yeah.
Right? So if this duty has been put on you by let's say a society, and or you have decided for yourself, it has to be respected and you can do it. But it has no contradiction with having a common life. So why should we, for example, nullify the other side? So you can say, okay, since this great duty has been put on me, then I can manage it. While even I have, for example, a common life, and even I can give birth to a child and to reach to the purpose that has been defined for us as, for example, duty-bound people. In case you want to live like a duty-bound person, for example, that cares for Islam and Islamic values. Because Islam tells us that this is your first and foremost duty, that you have to give, survival to the generation, right?
Yeah.
So this is something it doesn't actually have any contradiction with what you have chosen. Sometimes if you want to sacrifice yourself, I think if you're going to choose between two, then why shouldn't we choose, for example, from something that the engineer who engineered us and asked us to do? So why shouldn't we sacrifice ourselves for that perfect goal? So in case you want to prioritize between the goals, I think this is something that you yourself can decide on that.
Yeah.
And you are free, and let me assure you that you can go ahead and with what you have chosen for yourself. But be sure that it doesn't have anything to do with your common life and to being a housewife.
You know, but the thing
it doesn't mean that, for example, if you're a housewife, it doesn't mean that your husband is not going to support and help you while you're at home.
Of course.
So that's it.
But the problem is that, for example, if
we have seen, even some noblest that you said this is the ultimate thing that you're going to reach, you have seen the some normal is that they were ladies and they had some kids. And so I have many cases in mind, but I just forgot their names. So they had a successful life, at the same time a scholarly life.
Yeah, exactly.
But they had some kids, and they were living a good and happy life.
This is the part of a speech of the Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, on March 19, 2017. Fatimatu Zahra, God's greetings be upon her, was an Islamic woman. A woman at the highest level of Islamic standards and at the level of a leader. But the same woman who could have been a prophet in terms of spirituality and virtue used to carry out her motherly and wifely duties, and she used to do the housework. These things should be understood. What should one say to these ignorant and deceived individuals? They copy the statements that Westerners make. They should not belittle housework so much. Women's housework means cultivating individuals and producing the best and loftiest product of the universe, that is, humanity. Housework means this, but today our society needs to know what being a mother and a homemaker means. It needs to know what being an excellent homemaker means. With that position and with that status and greatness, Hazrat Fatimatu Zahra was a homemaker. This is not a source of humiliation for her. With that greatness, she cannot be humiliated. Can this greatness be belittled? So her greatness is preserved, but one of the aspects and duties of that greatness was being a spouse, a mother, and a homemaker. We should look at these concepts with such an outlook.
But the thing is, I don't know how the life of her, for example, would be, but I mean, just you have to think in this way, that this person is not that stupid to not think about the consequences of his actions, her actions, you know?
Who said that this person is stupid?
I'm not talking about stupidity, but most of the people are like, okay, you don't consider the future, or you are too ambitious, and it's because of your age, and it really bothers me. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I'm not that kind of person.
You can persuade anyone that says tells you such a thing. You can persuade him or her. Tell them, no, I have been thinking on all the consequences of the decision that I made.
Yeah, I prefer not to waste my time on that sort of thing.
Let me elaborate.
So this is the outcome of the cyberspace. You don't want to even talk to the people. Those whom you care for, at least. Try to persuade them.
Yeah, let me elaborate on this matter of choosing your responsibility. Mm-hmm. You know, that's, I think, the biggest issue that our youths are having at this stage in their life, because it's youth. It's a stage when their you know, mindset is now developing, mm-hmm. and they're starting to make choices. Yeah. And then they want to say, okay, I want to become this, I don't want to become that. I want to become this and that. Now, what is the deciding factor between so many choices? Why do you become a physician and not, for example, a surgeon? Why a surgeon, not, for example, a driver? All of these different options you have, but why do you choose for that one specific, you know, it all boils down to how you choose your responsibility. And many people, and unfortunately what happens is they say, oh, I like doing this. I'm so ambitious about this.
Yeah.
I enjoyed doing it once, right? Yeah. Now, does that really mean that you should make the purpose and responsibility of your life because you enjoyed doing it once? I'm not saying that no one should become a doctor. The thing is, when you're choosing a responsibility, when you're moving towards, you know, something that is, you know, that affects your life in long term, then you should be very careful as to what you're choosing. And you should be very sensitive that what you're choosing should not be bad for you in the future life. What happens many a times, you see people, they go for engineering because, oh, it's my passion. I've seen engineers, they're so good and stuff. But then all of a sudden, they end up becoming a taxi driver after finishing their entire education in their university life. Yeah. Not because they don't have a job, because they don't like engineering anymore. Mm. That one chemistry that they got from, you know, that's very important we understand. So we set the goals of life not based on the experiences and that happiness that we found previously, but exactly what God wants from us.
Let's take some examples from our life. There were some goals for us, let's say 10 years ago, that there are no more goals. Yeah. Because we have changed. I mean, we have actually matured in our lives.
Exactly. Right?
Because, I mean, there are some goals that we, even if we think about them, that sometime it was an important goal for us, it might even ridicule ourselves, I mean, from what we have been thinking before.
Yeah.
You see? So this is very important for you now at this time. Maybe 10, or 2, 3, or 10 years later, let's see how childish I was thinking, whether I had such a thing in my mind.
I don't deny that.
Right? So let's have all these things in mind, in a part of our mind, then decide correctly, inshallah.
Yeah, thank you. And the thing I want to tell you is that one of the things that most of the people believe in that is, for example, when you go for, I don't know, outside works, like, I don't know, being a physician or something, it means that you are not a woman anymore. I mean, being a woman and having woman feature, the emotional personality that most of the women of the world have, they think that it will affect them. But, you know, in this area, I have to tell you that I do not agree with that. I'm a woman and I have my features. I'm delicate. I have emotion. I'm not emotional. And I think the outside work doesn't affect that. What do you think?
If the outside work is actually relevant to your lifestyle and actually it's a kind of service like what a physician is doing, is giving service to the people like you, for example, to the ladies, why should it actually be violating the other rights of yours? I mean, the other. I think it's exactly in the same way that your own characteristics.
Yeah,
are,
you're giving this service, is beautiful.
And
answer.
It was something in the course of history. We have seen too many ladies that have been actually giving services to the diseased and to the ill people, right? So it's a great service. But what is destroying actually is that you dedicate too much time and allocate time which is more than necessity.
Yeah.
More than necessary to this job is something that, yes, it will change everything.
It's so both for male and female. So
yeah,
specific
it
to
doesn't, because, you know, yeah, based exactly. on Islamic teachings, we have been told that divide your time in a daily basis in 2, 3, or some say in 4 parts. So if you actually observe that timing, it would be okay for you and for us and for everyone in the society.
Yeah.
Yeah. A part of your time for your job, a part of time for your family, a part of time for your actually enjoyment and leisure time.
So if you divide
it, like, this is a wisdom. I mean, there is a wisdom behind it.
Exactly.
This is not something that came from, let's say, from the sky.
Random world, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not only just the time, the value you give to the different aspects of your life. The same way you value your education and your future life, you should also value your family. You should also value the common life that you're going to have with your partner, inshallah, very soon in the future, right? All of this needs to be, you know, considered not only your time management, but also in terms of quality of your time. Yeah. How do you spend your time in education? Also spend that same quality of time in your family, with your family as well. The same way you have struggles in your education, we all go through the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. We in education, we have some topics that are more difficult, some topics that are more easier, some topics that are completely, you know, foreign for us. But then likewise in the family affairs, sometimes we go through some chores or some tasks in the house. Some kids we might have that are extremely difficult to deal with. Mm-hmm. Some kids that are easier to deal with. Some kids that bring you really happiness. Sometimes
exactly.
you become sad about those kids.
If you manage your time wisely and you, for example, there would be no problem, inshallah, in the future. But if you actually dedicate, instead of, for example, 1/3 of your time to your job, you dedicate 2/3 or even the whole day of yours to your job and studies, so it will affect your life. It will affect your tranquility. So it's based on us. And it will show its consequences in your life. I have seen many cases that due to the, let's say, allocation of too much time to some other issues, for example, they don't have time to be with the family, but they become bad-tempered while they are at home because, I mean, they are stressful. So if we try to be wise and in distributing our time between the time gaps that we have been ordered, I think everything would be in its order.
Thank
so no
you.
Worries for you to choose your profession. Inshallah, and I wish you success.
Thank you for your beautiful dua. Thank you for being here with me. Yeah. It was a pleasure. And thank you to your listeners for listening to us. It was all the time we had for today's episode. I wish you farewell. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Shining bright, you came to us with a heart so full of love, and you showed that you're the everyone will say, please save me, except Al-Habib. Ummati, Ummati, يقولها لنا يوم القيامة. أمتي أمتي يقولها شفاعة أنا لها أنا لها.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Donald Trump has delivered a speech to Republicans in New Hampshire and has become the first to hit the 2024 campaign trail. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. ABC News has covered this story and tells us more. Former President Donald Trump made his campaign debut for his 2024 run on Saturday, 28th of January, in two key early voting states. Donald Trump's first stop was in New Hampshire, where he teased a ramp-up in campaign events, laid out an agenda focused on crime, immigration and education, and criticized the investigation into classified documents found at his Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida. This is about the beginning. You know, this is it. We're starting right here as a candidate for president, Trump said as he delivered remarks at the New Hampshire Republican Party's annual meeting. To save America, we need a leader who is prepared to take on the forces laying waste to our country. And we need a president who is ready to hit the ground running on day one. And I am... boy, am I hitting the ground. Looking to re-energize his campaign, Donald Trump addressed skepticism and criticism that he hasn't been on the road since his announcement back in November. They said he's not doing rallies, he's not campaigning, maybe he's lost that step. We didn't. I'm more angry now and I'm more committed now than I ever was, Donald Trump said to Cheers. Trump also took aim at Democrats, slamming the party for their planned 2024 presidential primary calendar, which would strip New Hampshire of its first-in-the-nation primary status. Trump said if elected, he would ensure New Hampshire remains the first-in-the-nation for Republican primaries, and he named outgoing state GOP chairman Stephen Stepanek as his senior advisor for his New Hampshire campaign. Saturday's campaign stops were also filled with not-so-slight digs at potential Republican contenders, as Donald Trump looks to dissuade other Republicans from launching presidential bids. The former president projected confidence in his ability to win the next presidential election, telling the crowd he doesn't think we have competition this time either. Following his event in New Hampshire, Donald Trump sent out a fundraising email seeking to capitalize on his return to the campaign trail. I will officially be the first Republican presidential candidate to campaign in the two early primary states of New Hampshire and South Carolina. No other candidate is working this early to win every last vote and save America from Joe Biden's destruction, the email stated. Trump also spent time during both his campaign stops on Saturday criticizing the FBI raid at Mar-a-Lago and the investigation into classified documents found at his estate in Mar-a-Lago. It comes as classified materials have also been found at the residence of former Vice President Mike Pence and also at the Wilmington, Delaware home of President Joe Biden. We have an FBI and a Justice Department that raids a very secure Mar-a-Lago in Florida, placed under lock and key with additional locks added at their request. But then they want nothing to do with Joe Biden's garage, where classified documents are strewn all over a wet floor, Donald Trump said in South Carolina. Attorney General Merrick Garland has appointed two special counsels to investigate Donald Trump and Joe Biden, whereas the Department of Justice is currently reviewing the material found at Mike Pence's Indiana home earlier this week. Talking about the FBI raid at Mar-a-Lago, Donald Trump continued his claim, "It only happened because the National Archives are part of the radical left." He said as president he would stop the appalling weaponization of our justice system and criticize the handling of classified material found at Mar-a-Lago versus in President Joe Biden's residences. "We have an FBI and a Justice Department that raids a very secure Mar-a-Lago in Florida, placed under lock and key with additional locks added at their request. But then they want nothing to do with Joe Biden's garage, where classified documents are strewn all over a wet floor," Donald Trump said in South Carolina. In South Carolina, for his second event of the day, Trump spoke to a small packed room filled with hundreds of people where he announced his leadership team for the state and spoke to the importance of the key early state. His South Carolina leadership team includes Senator Lindsey Graham, Governor Henry McMaster, Lieutenant Governor Pamela Ebert, Treasurer Curtis Loftus, Representative Joe Wilson, Representative Russell Fry, Representative William Timmons, former Lieutenant Governor Andre Bauer, and former U.S. Attorney Pete McCoy, and former Ambassador Ed McMullen. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered this story and tells us more. Donald Trump, the former US president, tried to get his spluttering White House bid off the launch pad on Saturday, 28th of January, declaring himself more angry than ever as he became the first candidate to hit the 2024 election campaign trail. Trump swung through New Hampshire, which holds the first in the nation Republican primary, and South Carolina, looking to shake off concerns about a lackluster campaign and Trump's fatigue among voters. "We need a president who's ready to hit the ground running on day one, and boy, am I hitting the ground," he told the New Hampshire State Republican Party's annual meeting. The media said, he's not doing rallies, he's not campaigning, maybe he's lost that step. I'm more angry now, and I'm more committed now than I ever was," he said. The remark elicited applause and cheers from the audience. Donald Trump formally launched his run for the White House more than 2 months ago with an address at his Mar-a-Lago club in Florida that was widely derided for its absence of sparkle or swagger. Such is the humbling nature of America's primary system that on Saturday, 28th of January, the one-time president, who used to fly in luxury on Air Force One with the world's most awesome military at his disposal, found himself speaking from a rudimentary wooden lectern at a high school auditorium in Salem. Later, he introduced his South Carolina campaign leadership team at the state capitol in Columbia, an unusual choice for a man who first ran for office as anti-establishment outsider, pledging to drain the swamp in Washington. Both events contrasted sharply with the rollicking rallies in which Donald Trump tends to thrive, suggesting an effort to show Republicans that he can be a more disciplined and conventional politician when he chooses. Newsmax, a conservative television network, described his performance as measured and presidential. Time-worn adjectives likely to have many Americans rolling their eyes after 4 years of tumult in the White House, culminating in the deadly 6th of January 2021 insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. But some things about Donald Trump, now 76 years old, don't change. He entered the New Hampshire event to the sound of singer Lee Greenwood's God Bless USA and began with his customary dubious claim that there were thousands of people outside the packed venue. He quickly mocked Democrats with nicknames such as Crazy Nancy Pelosi and Crying Chuck Schumer. Despite the advice of many Republicans to move on from his big lie that the 2020 presidential election was stolen from him, he could not resist an early swipe. As someone who's won the New Hampshire presidential primary not once but twice, and by the way, I believe we also won the two general elections, okay, if you want to know the truth, and I believe it very strongly, in plenty of other places also. The remark prompted some approving whoops from the audience. Trump went on to tick off familiar subjects and dust off old anecdotes, from energy independence to Hunter Biden's laptop. "We're going Marxist," he said, before decrying the participation of transgender people in women's sports. Some opinion polls have shown Donald Trump more vulnerable among Republicans than at any time since 2015, with Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, emerging as his principal rival.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.